Administration and the Ad Council.
North Kingstown's Information Station, 1540 WADK. It's the Open Forum on 1540 WADK. Call 846-1028, 846-1028. Now, the Open Forum on 1540 WADK.
And good afternoon. Welcome to the Open Forum. My name is Frank Prosnitz, and joining me this morning is Alan Rosenberg, editor of the Providence Journal. How are you, Alan?
I'm doing fine, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing well. You sound quite upbeat on this beautiful day. There are windows in the newsroom, correct?
That's right. And we can see the new hotel going up right across the way from us. It's always interesting to look at. So we've got a lot of interesting stuff going on.
First newsroom I ever worked in was at the Asbury Park Press, and this owner had this convoluted belief that we should have no windows in there. In the event of a nuclear war, we would all be protected. So, it was a weird situation, but that was okay. I learned a lot there. I'm going to go in absolutely no order. But what I think is interesting to people here is the relationship between the Providence Journal and the Newport Daily News, both under the same ownership now of Gatehouse, and also with the Newport Daily News actually selling its building. Is there a specific relationship? Is the news organization under the Providence Journal, or is there a separation?
Well, there's definitely a separation, Frank. We're all grouped together along with the newspaper on Nantucket and the one in Norwich, in what Gatehouse, which is the company that owns us, calls the Providence region. But each of the newspapers is run separately. The Daily News still has the same publisher as it did before, Bill Lucy. It has the same top editor, Jonathan Zins. I do talk to John on a regular basis, and people from our newsroom are talking to people in their newsroom. We cooperate. So that we don't end up with two reporters, maybe, or two photographers on the same story and nobody on some other story. We don't want to waste resources that are precious these days. We're working to help them with their digital report. As you might know, they didn't have a website other than posting an electronic replica of their newspaper and a few stories a day until the sale to our company, to Gatehouse. And so we're working with them on building their expertise in the online world. So there's definitely a relationship, and I've come to really like and know some of the people there. Annie Sherman, who runs their magazines and does a great job with Newport Life magazine. But we don't run them as a bureau of the Providence Journal. We're not telling them, you should cover this, you shouldn't cover that. John and his news editor, Gary Ruff, make the decisions in Newport, and I think that's the way it's going to be.
And you're sharing stories, though, between the papers.
Yeah, and that's, I think, have been helpful to both of us. We've gotten to run some of their really great journalism about what's going on Aquidneck Island and in Tiverton that helps us with areas where we don't have a bureau anymore like we did once upon a time. When we have a good story out of the State House or some other statewide story that they would otherwise have to hope that the Associated Press was going to run, and sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't, they're able to run our story in that respect. So I think it strengthens both newspapers.
So put in perspective for me a little bit about the size of staffs, and I guess there was this recent announcement of further buyouts from Gatehouse across the entire company, I believe.
I'm not sure about the entire company. Definitely there were buyouts in Massachusetts from what I read. Buyouts are being offered in Providence and Newport. They're not going to be huge numbers of buyouts. That's not the plan. We're trying to respond to the rising cost of paper, which, as you probably know, Frank, has gone up 30% and more this year, and which has been the target of tariffs coming from Washington.
And do you think those were targeted specifically?
I'm sorry?
No, I said, do you think those were targeted specifically?
Well, they're definitely on newsprint. They seem to have come at the behest of one newsprint producer in Washington State that wanted some protection from Canadian newsprint producers. None of the other newsprint producers in the United States have asked that protection. It's this one company. But the administration has been responsive to what they wanted. So, if you're asking, do I think that the president is targeting the news media, I don't know what's in the president's mind. I do know that there's this one company that has asked for protection. So when the cost of newsprint goes up, we have two major costs when you produce a newspaper today. One is paper, and the other is people. So if the cost of newsprint goes up, and we have taken a few pages off the press here in Providence wire service stories that we hope our readers won't miss too much, preserving local journalism. But there's a limit to what you can cut in terms of paper. We certainly don't want to cut 30% of the pages that we publish. So that's true across the Gatehouse company. So we want to make sure that we're preserving the pages, preserving the journalism. But in order to do that, so the other major cost is people, and we're trying to see if there are people who are willing to leave the company with an incentive to do so.
About how many people are we talking about?
I don't know.
Okay.
It depends on what we hear, but we're not targeting a huge number.
And so if we really look about coverage in this area, in the Newport area, we're really talking about, when we talk about numbers, we're talking about those that are at the Journal itself that are in fact covering the state statewide, and those who are still at the Newport Daily News who are covering this area. So they're really still a fair amount of numbers that are dealing with local and statewide news.
That's right. There's a perception aided by, some of our competitors that we're dwindling, we're shrinking, there's nothing left. We still have reporters, photographers. We have over two dozen. Newport still has a strong newsroom. We are the largest, certainly combined and even by ourselves here in Providence, the largest news organization in southern New England. You're not going to hear that from our competitors, but it happens to be the truth.
And who do you view as your competitors?
Well, once upon a time, as you know, when we were working together at the Journal, we looked at other newspapers in the state as our competition. I think these days we're looking at really every medium because the skills that once upon a time we wrote stories, that's what we did. We wrote newspaper stories and we took pictures. And the guys on TV took, moving pictures and they did stand-up narrations. But now we're taking video. We've got a lot of video and audio on providencejournal.com. They're writing longer stories and posting them on their websites. So I think, when we look at our competition, we're looking at the TV stations. To a lesser extent, I think a couple of the radio stations. And there are also a few standalone news websites. It's really all competition for the same audience, because the skills have merged, so it's one set of skills: writing, audio, video, still photography. It's all one set of things.
And Alan, we have to go to a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the value of what you still get out of print. There's been this price increase, and you hear the mumbling. For my money, there's still an incredible amount of value in those pages. And I want to talk about that. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
All right.
Here's a healthy tip from Newport Hospital. Maintaining a healthy weight is important at any age. Here's a simple strategy that helps keep you hydrated while helping to control calories. Drink more water. When you drink water, you are displacing calories from calorie-containing beverages. Drinking water before and between meals will also help fill you up and prevent overeating at mealtimes.
Hi, this is Ron Cowie, a manager at Elite Indoor Gun Range, Rhode Island's best indoor shooting range open to the public. I'd like to talk about a great opportunity we offer exclusively for women. Every Wednesday, women's range time is free. That's a $30 value. Our clean and air-conditioned range is supervised by polite professional range safety officers who ensure your time with us is as relaxing as possible. The variety of handguns, rifles, and shotguns we have for rent means all you need to shoot with us is a valid government ID. Each lane accommodates up to two people, so feel free to bring a friend, or don't, and unwind in our state-of-the-art shooting facility where you'll feel safe, welcome, and respected from the moment you walk through our front door. If you're new to shooting or looking for a range to call your own, give us a try. We're located at 371 Rose Hill Road in South Kingston, Rhode Island. Or you can find us online at EliteIndoorGunRange.com. We look forward to being your target sports home.
Whether you're renovating your home or building from the ground up, Riverhead Building Supply has what you're looking for. When you choose Anderson Windows and Doors, you'll get high-performing, dependable products and exceptional service. Try the 400 series, which brings you the best overall blend of performance and style. Anderson Windows, more than just a window. They're peace of mind. Visit a Riverhead Building Supply showroom or online at rbscorp.com.
Riverhead Building Supply.
There's a threat targeting America, one that's growing fast but may still be hard to see. Lyme disease. Spread by tiny ticks, often smaller than the head of a pin, this dangerous disease is now more widespread than West Nile, tuberculosis, and HIV/AIDS combined. And if left untreated, it can lead to arthritis, facial paralysis, and even memory and concentration problems, often called brain fog. As the threat of Lyme disease grows to more than 300,000 projected cases each year, it's time for us to target Lyme disease. That means checking for ticks when you've been outside, even in your own backyard. It means seeing a doctor if you experience the symptoms of Lyme disease, which can include joint pain, flu-like symptoms, fever, fatigue, or sometimes a bullseye-shaped rash. Set your sights on stopping Lyme. Learn how you can target Lyme disease at targetlyme.org.
Welcome, tourists, to the exciting vacation destination of southern New England. Listen to AM 1540 WADK to hear about all of the wonderful experiences in store for you while you spend time in our beautiful communities. Local radio always has the updated information you're looking for. Listen daily between 8 a.m. and noon for the 2-Minute Tourist Guide, designed expressly for you on your best source for information, AM 1540 WADK.
1,647. That's the number of Rhode Islanders who've died due to opioid overdoses in the past 6 years. 20,000. That's the number of Rhode Islanders struggling with opioid addiction right now. 211. That's the number to call for help. If you or someone you know needs help, United Way of Rhode Island and CVS Health Foundation can help. Dial 211. Help starts here. Sponsored by the United Way, CVS Health Foundation, and the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association.
1540 WADK. WADK.
And welcome back to Open Forum. My name is Frank Prosnitz, and with me today is Alan Rosenberg, who is the editor of the Providence Journal. And we've been talking about the journal, its coverage, and how it's kind of configured today. I wanted to talk about the value of the product itself. Used to be that the sometimes print would promote itself by saying that you know cut out all the coupons and you can save a lot more money than the paper it costs. But more importantly, I think people are able to take a look at the news coverage and make decisions about how to deal with their own lives. And there's a lot of information contained in the paper. One observation I've made, Alan, I think, and maybe I'm off, it seems like there's more effort to put local pieces, to have that front page more locally oriented than having a balance going more towards national or international news. Is that a correct observation?
Yes. Let me say, though, that we still have lots of coupons in the Sunday paper, and you will still more than make back the cost of your subscription from those coupons. I think we've looked at why do people come to the Providence Journal? What is the unique thing that we bring to the table? And certainly national stories are important. And today our lead story is about President Trump and his discussions with NATO, and we're always going to have those strong national stories on our front page. But that's not primarily, we think, why people come to the Providence Journal or to providencejournal.com. They come to us because they want to know what's going on in Rhode Island. And so we do give pride of place, generally speaking, to local stories. We have a large, as I said before, the largest local news staff in southern New England producing journalism about Rhode Island. And so when we have great stories coming out of our staff, we're going to give them priority over so-so stories that are coming from the wires.
Talk to me about the quality of the staff. It may be smaller, but it's still, you know, very well qualified, and a lot of people have been around a long time in this business who are covering the news very well.
Well, you know, we have a lot of really good veterans. That's true. You know, people like Gail Ciampa, our food editor, who's been with us for 30 years and food editor for the last 15 years and covers the restaurant scene as well as providing recipes. Catherine Gregg, who is our lead State House reporter, and nobody knows the State House the way Kathy does, along with Patrick Anderson, who's a more recent addition to our State House team. This is his second year, or maybe it's his third year, up at the State House, and they make a great 1-2 punch. Nobody else has two full-time people up at the State House. So we've got those veterans. We've got Tom Mooney, who's a wonderful writer, Wayne Miller, who's written numerous books and is covering the healthcare field for us. And then we've got brand-new additions who are doing a wonderful job. Kevin Andrade, who has just joined us in the last couple of months and is writing about immigrants and immigration, and who speaks fluent Spanish and Portuguese. Madeline List, who's covering Providence for us now, coming to us from the Cape Cod Times, and who speaks fluent Spanish. Brian Emeril, who's just joined us from WBUR in Boston, and before that from the Newark Star-Ledger, and who did a wonderful job covering the recent mafia trial in Boston. So we've got youth and energy, and we've got age and experience. And it's a great blend for us.
How has the coverage changed as the bureaus have disappeared and the coverage of local zoning boards or planning boards and even town councils has disappeared? How has that coverage changed, and what is your view in terms of covering those local governments?
Well, as I don't know if your listeners know, Frank, you and I worked together 40-some years ago in what was then our Greenville Bureau.
Spending the blizzard together. Yeah, the blizzard of 78.
Yeah, the blizzard of 78. And so we went to all the planning boards and zoning boards and town councils and school committees. And you're right, we're not in a position anymore to do those kinds of stories, that kind of coverage. So what we're looking for is to keep an eye on these local developments through local publications, through what we see on social media, and bring our readers the most interesting and the most important stories that are coming out of the cities and towns. So, for instance, we knew a couple of days ago that there was a sad situation in Warwick where the principal who had died, Stephen Schrabus, at Tollgate High School, there was a memorial rock that was painted to him, and the new principal had ordered it painted over, and people were upset. So we're getting the human story, but then we're also keeping an eye on the local cities and towns where there's a big story coming out of these boards. So we've had out of East Providence, coverage of their city council and its efforts to unilaterally extend its two-year terms into four-year terms. That's through our alliance with the Hummel Report. Jim Hummel, who used to work for us as a newspaper reporter, then went to Channel 6 as a TV investigative reporter, now has his own website, and we're working together to do these kinds of meaty stories that come out of some of the cities and towns. So it's a different approach to local coverage, but a lot of the best stories still come out of the cities and towns. It's by no means all about Providence.
So that kind of makes me think about what happens with election coverage. This is a really challenging year. We've got ton of candidates and lots of different individuals representing different philosophies and representing different parties, if you will. How will the Journal approach that that election coverage?
Well, we're going to be paying primary attention to the governor and Senate race, which are going to be nationally watched, to the other general officers and the other members of Congress, to whatever referendums are on the ballot, to this race for the Speaker, in the Speaker of the House's district in Cranston, and then to the mayor races in Providence and Warwick and East Providence. For local coverage in terms of the races on Aquidneck Island, I think your best bet there is the Newport Daily News.
Right, so this is unique here because there is a daily publication that is covering the island, so they provide that, and there's also, and I do some stuff with What's Up Newport, which is a pretty good website in terms of here. So I think this area is probably in a better place than much of the state for that local coverage. But when I take a look at places like, well, like that's, you know, maybe I'm wrong because I think about Wesley, you've got the Westerly Sun. So maybe we still have, a vibrant second tier, if you will, of media in a lot of these communities.
We're really lucky in Rhode Island that to have a number of dailies and weeklies that do a good job of covering the kind of local news that once upon a time we were able to also cover and we no longer have the resources to cover. I think on the island, it's the Daily News, but the Westerly Sun, the Warwick Beacon, the Woonsocket Call, all the different papers around the state do a good job of covering the local cities and towns.
When you recruit or you get applications, are you finding that there are more or less people that have an interest in print journalism for sure, but in journalism in general?
Well, I was really pleasantly surprised. We had these openings that I described to you earlier where we hired Kevin and Brian and Madeline, and when we advertised, I didn't know what we would get, and we had over 70 applications for qualified applications, I should say. There were a few others who just saw that there was a job and pressed a button on a recruiting website without thinking about whether they knew what to do, but people with journalism experience who wanted to come work at the Providence Journal. So I was really pleasantly surprised that there are a lot of people out there who do want to work and who want to work at the Providence Journal.
Alan, we're going into our next break. I wanted to, when we come back, to talk about the attacks on the free press and how that relates to our overall democracy when we all go way back in the protections of the free press, and also to talk about fake news and whether that's overblown and how you at the Journal and in journalism in general protect against that. And we will be back in just a couple of minutes.
Sure.
The savings are sizzling at Fifth Ward Liquor. Seth comes through again. So stop by Fifth Ward and check out some amazing values. Fisher's Island Lemonade in 4-pack cans, just $16.75. Ragged Island Beach Night IPA, 4-pack cans, $17.99. Look for the Bettini Cocktails at $17.99. Kiel Vodka 175 is now $27.99. Fifth Ward Liquor has Weller Special Reserve Bourbon at $25.99. The Palm Rosé by Whispering Angel, only $15. Newport Rosé from Provence, $15. Try the Capriccio Sangria for $6.99, and Fifth Ward has Narragansett Fresh Catch in 12-pack cans. For these and many more great values, stop by Fifth Ward Liquor, 695 Lois Thames, Newport.
The fun starts quicker with Fifth Ward Liquor. You better take the fifth.
Banking can be pretty much the same everywhere, but what's not the same at every financial institution is the people. And at People's Credit Union, the people who work there are in the business of helping the people who bank there. People's Credit Union takes pride in getting to know you and offering financial solutions that can really help. People's Credit Union has great low rates on home, personal, auto loans, and they can even refinance your existing loans. Why not stop in a branch to say hi or visit online today at peoplescu.com. People's Credit Union. You belong here.
Member NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
People's Credit Union is proud to share the spotlight with these fine area businesses.
This is Brian Mason of the Apollo Consulting Group. We help small and mid-sized companies improve profitability, get more customers, and streamline our operations. Call us now at 401-862-6339.
Planning a wedding, party, or corporate event? Choose Blackstone Caterers for exquisite food, spectacular presentation, and unfailing service. Since 1945, their mission has been to deliver beyond expectation. Let them make you the consummate host of your next event. Online at BlackstoneCaterers.com.
WADK gives you the information you need.
If you wait for the newspaper, it's old news. You know, you want to keep up to date.
On air and online.
Everything's online.
WADK.com.
And welcome back to Open Forum. My name is Frank Prosnitz. With me today is Alan Rosenberg. He is the editor of the Providence Journal, Rhode Island's most prominent newspaper, and also under the same ownership, Gatehouse, as the Newport Daily News. Alan, I wanted to ask about all these attacks on the free press. I don't think that in my lifetime I've ever seen anything like this coming from politicians in all sense, and actually seeming to resonate with a number of people. I'm surprised at how many people talk to me about fake news and people who I had I thought were better than that and smarter than that. That's not a right term. What's your take on what this has all done to the media and its credibility, and how should people deal with these attacks?
Well, I think there's no question that it's troubling when the President of the United States declares that the news media are the enemy of the American people. That is a very bold statement, and one that, as we've seen in other countries, can lead to very serious things, to kidnappings and murders and people disappearing when you are labeled the enemy of the people. Nothing like that so far has happened in this country, but it's a tone that is deeply disturbing, as is the so-called fake news. As you will recall, I know, Frank, that term really started in 2016 in response to things that were clearly fake, meaning made up. Like Hillary Clinton running a sex ring for children out of a pizza shop in Washington, D.C., which was made up by some teenagers in Moldova or someplace trying to harvest clicks. And it might have seemed funny if some guy didn't show up at the pizza parlor with a gun looking for the child sex ring so that he could break it up and save these kids from Hillary Clinton. So from that labeling of actual fake news that was being promulgated during the 2016 election, Mr. Trump turned that term around and weaponized it towards genuine journalism that he doesn't like. And that's really how it is mostly used today, is that people of various stripes, but certainly including the president, who says this a lot, take a story that they simply don't like and label it as fake. And often what we see coming out of the White House is that the first day it's labeled as fake, and the second day they're explaining why it happened. But that first labeling of fake often sticks in people's minds. So how do you deal with that? The way we deal with that is to be careful, to be clear that we are an honest broker of news and opinion, to make sure that we are playing things down the middle, that what we write is firmly supported by facts, by only using unnamed sources in very rare and specific circumstances, that we then explain to our readers why are you using this unnamed source, but to make that a very, very rare circumstance, and to deal with the news in a very factual way. So you were talking before about the kinds of stories I put on the front page of the journal, and one of the things I've tried to do is to stick with what actually happened, not what are people speculating might happen or rumored to be about to happen or sources say should happen or did happen, but what are the real policies of the people in Washington? What are the people who are being affected? Who are being affected? How are they being affected? Real people with real names and real photographs, so that when people look at the Providence Journal and at its front page, they're seeing a report that can't be labeled as fake because it's well substantiated and absolutely true.
And oftentimes, and I think in rare instances, is it that there's not multiple sources for a particular story? And I think that's one of the keys to taking a look at whether something is or is not fake news.
Right, and that's certainly the standard that we try to uphold, that stories need to have more than one voice. If you look at Mark Patinkin's columns when he's writing about other people, he's writing with including a second voice. Making sure that it's not just this one person who says what their situation is, but that someone with independent knowledge is confirming it. So that if our readers wanted to go back and retrace any reporter's steps, they would know who to talk to and how to find them. My presumption is those people would say the same thing to that reader who was following up as they did to our reporter. So that none of this is a mystery, none of this is being kited, it's all vetted, it's all edited, no reporter is just slamming his or her own report into the newspaper or onto the website. We've got layers of accountability, and all that, I hope, leads to credibility, which is what we should have because of the way we approach the work.
If you put yourself in the place of a typical reader, what's the advice that you would give them to determine whether anything is real or fake? And I'm not talking about in print, but they go online and they read a story and it shows up on Facebook, it shows up on Twitter. What should they be looking for to at least be clear in their mind that what they're reading is accurate?
I think you look for multiple sources of information. And when I say source of information, I mean credible sources of information, whether that is a known quantity like the Associated Press or the Washington Post or the New York Times or CBS or NBC, or whether it's a fact-checking website like PolitiFact or Snopes.com. I will often, if something seems bizarre, I will often go to Snopes and check and see, and often they have checked it out and they know whether it's true or it's false. But often if you see something on the web that just seems too bizarre to be true, that's because it is not true. And so you shouldn't just accept everything that you see because it is right there in front of you in type. There's a joke that has run around the internet for years about Abraham Lincoln saying that you should always check a second source on the web. And while Abraham Lincoln obviously didn't say that, that is absolutely true.
I often advise people to do exactly what you just said in terms of taking a look at online sites like PolitiFact or Snopes, the fact-checking sites. Talk to me about those and how important they are. And there used to be a relationship specifically between the Journal and PolitiFact in which Gene Emery used to be in the newsroom doing that stuff.
Right, and Gene actually still has more recently done some stuff for their national site. Fact-checking sites, I think, do a terrific job. Washington Post has its own fact-checker that doesn't give out pants on fire but gives out Pinocchio.
I love those Pinocchios.
Right, and so, I mean, these are kind of gimmicky and kind of fun, but there's a serious desire behind it to hold people accountable for the things that they say. There were several times when we were doing the PolitiFact effort that politicians that we approached said, well, I wouldn't have said it if I'd known I was going to be PolitiFacted. Unfortunately, in order to be affiliated with PolitiFact, you have to commit two full-time reporters and an editor to working on PolitiFact. We're not staffed at this point to the way that we can do that. But the fact-checking sites, by and large, do a great job, and often they find themselves repeatedly debunking the same claims because politicians keep making the same claims. And so they go back and say, no, we said in August that it wasn't true. It's still not true. And readers who want to be really informed, that's a great place to get substantiated, well-checked, well-documented information. And I know just with PolitiFact, everything that they write is footnoted. So if you want to see, if they make a claim in the body of their item that here's what is the truth about what that politician said, there'll be a citation. You can go and read the original document. It doesn't get much better than that. And that's something that we try to do on providencejournal.com as well, is post original documents, link to the websites that we're writing about where there's information that we're citing. Again, to try to substantiate for readers that they don't just have to take our word for it, that here's the original source. That's something that you can do on our website that, of course, is impossible when you're looking at a two-dimensional newspaper.
One of the other things that PolitiFact does, which I think is great, is they always go back to the source of that information, and they give them an opportunity to be able to comment on what they have actually stated that PolitiFact is going to take a look at.
Yeah, I think they do a terrific job. I wish we were still affiliated with them, but I have no hesitation in pointing people towards PolitiFact. There are local affiliates around the country in various places, but their primary effort is national, and so if you're looking to see whether a national claim is true, that's that is a great place to go.
I just actually pulled PolitiFact up, and not to go into anything in particular, but it makes some nice reading today, and lots of different things being checked, including, I'll throw out the most outrageous one up here, shocking video emerges of Obama mocking God in the Bible. That was deemed as false. And that came from bloggers, specific who they were. But that's going to bring us to our last break, Alan. You know what? I want to come back, and I want to talk about your career, whether journalism is what you had expected it to be when you came out of Northwestern, and some of the things that have been most noteworthy and made such an impression upon you over these many years now.
Okay.
All right. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Humphreys Building Supply, 1540 WADK, and the all-new Mix 99.3 present the Newport County Chamber of Commerce Business of the Week.
ESHI stands for Excellence, Service, Honesty, and Integrity. All traits you will find when you work with ESHI Builders of Middletown for your residential or commercial design and building needs. Go to eshibuilders.com for more information.
Think, be, and support local. Start with this Business of the Week.
color is the strongest element of visual perception. That's why across the shelves of each of Humphrey's two full-service paint centers, Humphrey's Building Supply in Tiverton, and their newest acquisition, Beach Paint by Humphrey's on Aquidneck Avenue in Middletown, you'll find the most comprehensive line of Pittsburgh paints. Area professionals and the do-it-yourself crowd trust Humphrey's. Shouldn't you? For more information, go to buildwiththeh.com.
It's an action-packed week of tennis and events coming up in Newport, July 15th through the 22nd. Top tennis pros from around the globe are heading to the Ocean State to compete in the Dell Technologies Hall of Fame Open. It'll be a grand celebration on Saturday, July 21st for the Hall of Fame induction. Plus, former world number ones Jim Courier and Leighton Hewitt are back in action on Sunday, July 22nd for Invesco Legends Newport. With your ticket, enjoy world-class pro tennis, free access to the museum, tennis clinics for all ages, and more. For tickets, go to HallOfFameOpen.com.
Time to treat yourself to those world-famous Twin Lobster Rolls at the Easton Speed Snack Bar. Open every day. Savor two buttery toasted 6-inch rolls filled with chunks of sweet lobster with some fries. Just $16.87. Or do the plain and simple. A buttered and grilled 9-inch roll loaded with meat from the whole lobster served with drawn butter and fries. Only $18.87 and only at the Easton's Beach Snack Bar. Open every day 10 a.m. to 7:30 in the evening. Stop by or check out twinrolls.com.
Summer is here. Buckley Heating and Cooling provides reliable, affordable energy products and services for your year-round comfort. Buckley is a full-service company specializing in automatic fuel oil and propane delivery, energy-efficient products, and maintenance service. Buckley offers high-efficiency systems, space heating, AC, generator service agreements, and central heating and cooling installs. Financing available, as well as cashback rebates. Make sure your home is ready to enjoy the summer. Buckley Heating and Cooling, BuckleyHC.com.
At DF Dwyer Insurance, they have a rich history of working with many not-for-profit organizations with a thorough understanding of the challenges faced by nonprofits as they strive toward their missions. Let the professionals at Dwyer obtain the best and most cost-effective coverage your nonprofit needs. Visit Dwyer, in business since 1962, at one of their locations, on Bellevue in Newport, or in Jamestown on Narragansett Avenue. Online at dfdwyer.com. Dwyer Insurance will always do what's best for their clients.
DUI defense, divorce, misdemeanor or felony criminal charges, child custody disputes. If you or someone you know are facing such legal challenges, then put experience on your side and have the Flanagan Law Offices help you defend your rights. Frank Flanagan is a veteran trial attorney and a Navy JAG veteran who's been helping individuals in criminal courts and family courts for over 20 years. Frank Flanagan can help you. The Flanagan Law Offices are located with Joe Houlihan's old firm of Houlihan, Manahan, Morrissey, and Kyle at 195 Broadway in Newport at the building many of you may remember as the former Broadway Post Office. If you're in a legal battle, you need a fighter in your corner. The Flanagan Law Office can fight for you. Call Frank Flanagan at 849-3337 or check out their website at lawyernewportri.com. DUI defense, divorce, misdemeanor or felony criminal charges, child custody disputes. The Flanagan Law Offices can protect your rights.
Hi, this is Robert Greece on the CEO Show, playing on Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m. WADK, 1540 a.m., Newport, Rhode Island.
And welcome back to the last segment of Open Forum. My name is Frank Prosnitz. With me is Alan Rosenberg. Alan, I wanted to kind of drift back a little bit and let people learn a little bit more about you. When was it that you first thought you wanted to go into journalism?
Well, I didn't really start out to go into journalism. I started out to be president of the United States.
Oh, you get too bad you didn't make a different turn.
But you can't just be the president. You have to start, you have to be in the Senate or something first, and you can't just start there. You generally have to be a lawyer or something. And so I thought that journalism school would teach me to observe and teach me to express myself concisely and prepare me for a life in law and politics. And while I was at Northwestern, they sent me out to an internship in a little newspaper in West Virginia. And it turned out that I kind of liked it, and they thought I was pretty good at it, and so I put all that other stuff on temporary hold, which is where it still is.
Yeah.
So I didn't have a specific vision when I started out. As you know, Frank, the way we produced the paper back 40 years ago was quite different than it is today. We were writing on teletype machines with no memory when I got to the Greenville Bureau. If the lights blinked, we lost our stories. There was probably somebody lined up right behind you to write their story, so you had to write fast and move on. And if we shot film for the next day's paper for photographs, you had to walk down the street to meet the bus that was heading towards Providence, where the driver would pick up your film and take it to the Bonanza bus station across from the Journal Building where the convention center is now. And a copy clerk would come across and meet the bus driver and bring it up to the photo lab, where it would be bathed in chemicals, making it ready for the next day's paper. And, you know, we do all that stuff now on computers, and we publish to the web in the blink of an eye. So all that kind of stuff has changed. What hasn't changed is the values that we bring to the work and our commitment to telling important and interesting local stories, regardless of the technology, regardless of whether we're now doing it on video or audio or in printed form, to tell the people of Rhode Island what's really going on in their state day to day. So there's been a lot that has changed and yet a lot that hasn't.
Yeah, I've often said to people, it really doesn't matter what the delivery system is. What really matters is how the news is collected. And that hasn't changed for decades, and that good journalists are going to use the same kind of methods, tenacity, honesty, as they have forever.
And, you know, we may reach a point, and maybe sooner rather than later, where what we think of as the, you know, the internet seems quaint because everybody has a chip implanted in their forehead, and they can see a holographic image of somebody telling them the news. And that doesn't matter as long as the people who have gathered the news have applied the same standards that you and I have been talking about of rigorous fact-checking, rigorous reporting, real quality journalism that is produced with vetted sources on the record so that you know that you can trust it.
Alan, when you take a look back at your own career, what are the stories that really jump out at you that may have been the ones that were most, and I'm not saying most impactful, but maybe most interesting?
Well, I think of I guess three main stories that I covered personally because I've spent most of my career here as an editor. Early on, I covered both trials of Klaus von Bülow, and the first one, of course, took place in Newport. For readers who are younger than you and I, or listeners rather, who are younger than you and I, so Klaus von Bülow was a Newport socialite and the husband of a very wealthy woman in Newport. And one morning she turned out to be lying unconscious on the marble floor of her Bellevue Avenue mansion, and he was charged with twice trying to kill her by injecting her with insulin. And that case brought reporters from all over the world. It had a fascinating cast of characters, princes and European doctors and soap opera stars. And to be part of that was quite amazing for a young reporter. Later on, when I was working in our features department and entertainment coverage, I had the chance to interview William Shatner, and that was a lot of fun. He seemed surprised I had actually read the book that he was pushing. But the most memorable part of that for me was that when we started the interview, he had a lot of trouble in his hotel room making the phone work. And just the image of Captain Kirk befuddled by 20th century phone technology made a good lead for my story anyway. And the other one was when I was a young police reporter. One of the things you do as a police reporter is you knock on people's doors when their loved ones have died, and you ask them if you can tell the story of the person who died so that they won't simply be a name and a statistic. And there was a young woman whose body was found in a quarry in Pawtucket. And when I knocked on that family's door, they welcomed me in, and they really wanted to talk about Frankie, was her name, and let me tell her story in a way that would bring her, even fleetingly and on paper, back to life. And that was a great honor that still sticks with me.
And those are the kinds of stories. Actually, that's quite an interesting threesome, if you will, that goes from the courtroom to telling Frankie's story to William Shatner, who I guess was still living in a century beyond us. So,
yes, he's a lot of fun to talk to. I've done other celebrity interviews. I've reviewed restaurants. I was lucky enough to go to Israel in 1997 to do an arts reporting trip, and there was I encountered a young soldier who was also a painter, and who spent a day with me in Jerusalem, and showed me the city through his eyes and told me about his life as both soldier and artist. And it's when people let you into their lives like that, that journalism on a personal level becomes really rewarding, not just to inform people, which is the primary thing that we do and the reason that we do it, but to be allowed into someone's life and entrusted with the responsibility of telling their story. That was another place where I felt really honored to be allowed to tell somebody's tale.
You know, as you know, for a number of years I worked with the Rhode Island Blood Center, and I always thought that my real title should have been storyteller, because I went out and I met a lot of people who were in treatment for some of the most devastating diseases on earth, who were recovering from horrific auto accidents, and doing just that, Alan, allowing me to come in and to talk to them and to learn about their stories and to learn about them as individuals. I've often said here and any place I've practiced journalism or storytelling that everybody has a great story to tell, that their lives, they're much more interesting than they think they really are.
I think you can go on any bus, ripped a bus in the state of Rhode Island, and sit down next to just about anybody, and you would come away with a great story.
And that's going to bring us just about, we've got about a minute or so left. Any last things that you would like to leave people with in thinking about journalism in general and its future and how people need to regain trust in it?
Well, I think what I'd like to leave people with is the thought that there is only one way to have trustworthy journalism, and that is to have trustworthy journalists, and that it's not free. I often hear from people, I don't want to pay for that. The news should be free. And, in a wonderful world, people would work for the love of it, and they wouldn't need to worry about paying rent or buying food. But the people who work here do need to worry about those things. And so if you want trustworthy journalism, if you want journalism that you can rely on to tell you what's really going on, then please be willing to pay for it. Buy a subscription to the Newport Daily News or to the Providence Journal. Go online to our website, buy an online subscription, whatever your preferred method is of getting it. But be willing to contribute to the effort of keeping you informed in a way that you can count.
And Alan, I've got to hold you there because we're out of time. I want to thank you for being with us today. And I'm going to catch up with everybody next Tuesday. And What's Up Newt Radio Edition follows.
Thanks for having me on.
This has been the Open Forum. The views and opinions.